cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer, and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. It's been a minute. Hopefully everybody is doing well. Time really doesn't exist anymore after the World Cup summer. I know I've seen a lot of people talk about the kind of World Cup hangover that we're all dealing with. I've had conversations with people like, man, the games were all so great. Now I'm trying to get back into the league play, whether you're watching Copa Sudamericana tonight, you've been watching MLS, you've been watching USL. There's games all over the place going on right now. All the preseason friendlies with your European clubs are happening at the moment. MLS All-Star game tomorrow. The game never stops. And that's what's so wild about kind of where we are in the calendar and where we are in this conversation right now, because there's still fallout from the World Cup that we're going to talk about. We'll get into that in the next segment. We might have an update on Mauricio Pochettino as well. Andres Cantor breaking some news earlier today on the social media apps. But we're going to start with MLS and we're going to start with Atlanta United. And yeah, it was a week. It was a long week for those of us who were on the trip. We were in Charlotte for 3 days and then to Foxborough. And it was a draw and a loss. And this was after the Nashville game, which showed a lot of promise. You know, it's crazy. It feels like that Nashville game was a month ago, and it wasn't that long ago, in between the World Cup semifinal and the final. But that game showed, I thought, a lot of promise against a top team in Nashville in the league. And then you go to Charlotte, and you fall behind 2-0 at halftime. And the first goal, I mean, it's a crazy sequence. I still think you need to call something in the run of play. Kerwin Vargas opens the scoring. It's a transition the other way after a turnover from Atlanta, but the turnover happened after, at a minimum, a high boot inside the 18-yard box. Maximum, it's a penalty for Atlanta. It was a very odd sequence. And look, then Charlotte transitions and they get the goal. Second goal comes off of a recycled set piece. You're down 2-0. Atlanta found a way back in the game in Charlotte. And it made you feel good about going to New England, and we'll get there in a second. Going back to look at that Charlotte game, I think it shows you something that I've talked about a lot this season, and I've asked Tata Martino about it multiple times. I've asked a lot of different players about it. I think Atlanta United is at their absolute best when the fullbacks get high up the field. And you saw Elias Baez and Tomas Jacob involved in both goals that brought the team back. Jacob with two assists. Baez, I think, should have had a secondary assist on the second goal that Miguel Almiron scored. The fullbacks are key in the way that Tata Martino wants to play and the way that right now this offense is structured, because you have wide players who don't stay really all that wide. They come inside into the pocket. So your width has to come from the fullbacks. And you saw how good that can be in Charlotte. Well, you also saw how that can, when it doesn't materialize, how things can look in the attack in New England. And I think more than anything, when you go through these two games, and we'll include the Nashville game as well, you've scored 3 goals in 3 games. 2 of them in the Charlotte game that were created by your fullbacks. 1 of them in the New England game that was a really well-played attacking sequence with Kamen Togashi involved, with Alexei Maranchuk involved, and with Miguel Almiron scoring his second goal of the week. But it was goal 1 when you were already down 4-0. So the meaning is not quite the same. Great goal, but the meaning is not quite the same. This attack is the team's issue, and Madison Cruz wrote about it at soccerdownhere.net, and I know she talked about it on the full-time report. To me, everything that goes wrong with Atlanta United at the moment is down to the lack of attacking threat. Creating danger is a phrase that I've talked about a lot over the last 18 months. And if you really want to go back, and look, I know right now there's a lot of people who don't want to hear anything other than yelling and screaming and saying that, you know, everything is terrible, and I don't know what that accomplishes. It's not good. You don't need me to tell you that. You don't need me to tell you what you're already saying. I don't think that really accomplishes anything in a radio program, in a podcast. I'll tell you what I think about where Atlanta United is right now and how it changes. I think when you look back, because no, anybody who tries to tell you that Atlanta United hasn't been good since 2018 is lying to you. 2019, you should have been back to MLS Cup. 2021, the second half of that season, you were one of the best teams in the league, I think along with two others. 2023, you were right there, a very good team, and you got beat by the team that ended up winning MLS Cup. In 2024, even when in a bad conclusion to the season, you knocked out the best team in league history at that point, Inter Miami, in the playoffs. So, no, let's not do the revisionist history that everything has been bad. But if you want to go back to where things have been different and have where they have been much worse, it's when Yorgos Yakimakis demanded a move. That was the last striker that produced consistently. That was the last one you had. And you go back to the team with him in it and since. And it's not to say that everything is on Yorgos. It's saying that everything is on having a striker that commands attention, that creates danger, that causes a problem for the opponent. When you don't have that, teams approach you differently. Teams aren't afraid of you. Teams get a little aggressive in how many numbers they commit higher up the field. Here's the flip side of it too. And we talk about the mental side of the game a lot. And I don't know, for some people that's not acceptable to talk about because professional athletes shouldn't be thinking, I guess. I don't know. Shouldn't have emotions. I don't know. When you're in a team that doesn't have a striker that commands that respect and creates danger and causes problems for the opponent, when you're in the team that doesn't have that, it affects you too, because you have to be perfect. It's so much more difficult to score goals that win matches. And when you fall behind, it's so much more difficult to come back. That's why the comeback in Charlotte was very impressive, keyed by the fullbacks, not the strikers. You've got to solve that issue. And you guys who pay attention on social media, if you read The Athletic, there's been plenty of other reporting about this. There are talks happening. Chris Henderson told us on the pregame show on Wednesday in Charlotte and again on Saturday in Foxborough that there are conversations happening where it comes to Latte Lott. He was not part of the trip. He was not part of team training today for the 15 minutes that, maybe 20. We might have got a couple bonus 5 minutes. He wasn't part of it today out on the field. There's talk about a move for him back to England. There have been rumors about two different forwards potentially coming to Atlanta, and these would be big names that would command respect walking in the door and would cause problems for the opposition. Again, walking in the door, they've got to produce because that's the issue that we've seen lately. But when you look at guys like Brielle Mbolo or Darwin Nunez, you're having a different conversation about it. So Nunez, 27 years old, he is reportedly leaving Al Hilal of the Saudi Pro League by mutual agreement. 1 year into a three-year deal that was worth roughly 53 million euro. He's not registered as a foreign player in domestic play right now. They signed Karim Benzema instead after they had signed Nunez because they just make it make sense. I don't know. Now, there has been reporting since the report that Nunez was linked to Atlanta. Reporters out of Turkey say that Nunez was nearing a loan agreement with Beşiktaş for the upcoming season. Have not seen any further updates on that. That was potentially going to reunite him with former Liverpool teammate Mo Salah, but the Mo Salah part of the Beşiktaş deal seems to have fallen apart, so we don't know if the Darwin Nunez part is still being talked about. Reporting out of Turkey, when it comes to transfers, can be an interesting business. Not really quite sure who to trust and which ones are being fed information by agents and which ones are being fed information by clubs and which ones are being fed information by both. The other player that's been linked is Brile Mbolo, the Swiss international. He is at Stade Rennes in Ligue 1. Strong World Cup for him with Switzerland. Yes, he was involved in something that we will talk about in the second segment of the show at the World Cup, a dive that led to a yellow card upon review, and it was the second yellow, so he was sent off in the match against Argentina. But he had an amazing tournament, and Brile Mbolo has been a player at 29 years old who's been very, very impressive. Now, here's the thing with this from a roster rules perspective. Both Nunez and Mbolo would be designated players. Right now, you do not have a designated player spot open. If you move Latte Lott, depending on how you move him, you have to get him off of your roster completely to open up the designated player spot. It's very complicated, and there are lots of aspects of the rules of how that happens. If it is a loan, for example, that are not necessarily public and not necessarily easily digestible. So we will see. And look, here's the thing. This is why you have somebody like Dimitrios Evstathiou in your front office who was in the league office and understands the league rules probably better than anybody outside of the league office right now. So he will be involved, obviously, in crafting whatever exit there is for Latte Lott to open a designated player spot for a potential replacement. Have not seen any further updates other than the Nunez update, which now might not necessarily be accurate. We'll keep you posted. It's rumor season, so be careful and make sure you're paying attention to where they're coming from and make sure you know kind of what's credible and what isn't. If it is an egg avatar on a social media site, probably don't believe that rumor. If it's somebody who has 500 followers, probably don't believe that rumor. Check outlets. Make sure things are being talked about by reputable outlets. That is a key this time of year. The other thing that's going on in the MLS side of things, the All-Star Game is tomorrow. Doing a viewing party if you are in town at Brewhouse South Downtown. Great location if you didn't get a chance to check it out during the World Cup. We're going to do a little show on the Soccer Down Here Network from 7 to 8. And in the games at 8 o'clock, MLS versus Liga MX. But when you have the All-Star Game, you have the Board of Governors meetings. You have other meetings with the sporting committee and other committees around the league. And The Athletic is reporting that MLS owners and Board of Governors are having a very interesting conversation right now about a plan moving forward to a more open salary cap system. The MLS salary cap and roster rules are probably more convoluted than even the NBA's. And if you're a big NBA fan, you're probably shaking your head and asking how, and it would take a long time to explain it. But they are. You're trying now to get to a much easier way to give teams more flexibility in how they build a roster. So the talk about it at the moment would revolve around a salary floor and a salary ceiling. Right now, the floor is being talked about at $15 million. The ceiling is at $30 million. You would keep designated players in the mix, which would be off cap. You would potentially keep another incentive set, like right now, the U22 rule. I think you need those. I would like to see that floor and that ceiling go up a little bit higher. I'd like to see 20 and 40 to start with, and you know they're going to inch up from there. This is going to be a big conversation. We could get updates tomorrow about it. This could be moving very fast, MLS 3.0 or 4.0 or 5.0, depending on what version we're in. But a lot happening around the league. And yeah, Atlanta United's going to be part of this in terms of what they do to get a functioning attack going right now for Tata Martino and crew. All right, coming up on the other side of the break, let's talk U.S. men's national team. We've got an update on Mauricio Pochettino. We've got some World Cup fallout to deal with. All that's coming up. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight, coming after the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game. Let's get back into some World Cup fallout. And let's start with the U.S. men's national team. Mauricio Pochettino, contract up at the end of the tournament. And a lot of debate about what would come next. There was a lot of debate about Mauricio Pochettino last summer, and then at the end of the games in the fall, and then after the games in March, and then really in the run-up to the tournament. And I feel like all of those debates and conversations were extremely different. I mean, it was whiplash trying to follow all this. Well, after the World Cup, actually, let me go back. There was more whiplash. The run-up until the round of 16... Everybody loved the team. Everybody loved Mauricio Pochettino. Everybody was happy. Then the Belgium game happens, and you get outplayed by a wide margin, and you had, as people have talked about since, it was something that, you know, we got into on AST during the tournament. I felt like the entire situation around Folair and Balogun being able to play in that match became a negative. It became a distraction, and Balogun talked about this. Others have talked about it. I think the political nature of how everything played out really turned the U.S. from a team that people were liking to a team that people were rooting against. And that affected this team. And that was a real shame. And I think that affected that performance. Also, you know, flat out, Belgium was the better team. They were the better team walking in the door, and they were the better team on the night. So then there were a lot of reactions the other way about Mauricio Pochettino. Usually, in these kinds of situations, you need to let things breathe and then make decisions. Before the tournament, an offer was put in front of Pochettino for the next World Cup cycle to take him through the 2030 World Cup. And he said he would consider it. Well, reporting today from Andres Cantor, who's not usually one to break news, by the way. I did not have my notifications on for Andres to break this news today after 4 o'clock, said that renewal talks are advanced, they're going well, and the goal is to announce something soon so Pochettino and his staff can start preparing for the September-October FIFA window. So nothing official yet, but it seems like things are trending towards a stay, which I think is a good thing. I think when you look at the World Cup in totality, the way that the U.S. played, the style of play, the game model that they had, the strides that Pochettino made with this group, I would like to see it continue. I have always, and I will put my hand up in the air right now, I have always been somebody who has generally leaned to one cycle for a national team coach. Do a World Cup cycle. Well, Pochettino didn't do a full World Cup cycle. He took over after the Copa America in 2024. He really needed time to get things where he wanted. And I think you saw that start to come to fruition during the Gold Cup last summer. And I think you saw it pay off in a good World Cup. Was it the best World Cup ever in terms of results? No, you didn't get past the round of 16. You've done that before. Don't talk to me about 1930 where there were 13 teams in the tournament. You couldn't have a round of 16. Yes, you were in a semifinal because you won a group with two other teams in it. That's not the same thing. In modern times, you've been to a quarterfinal once. You lost to Germany after beating Mexico in the round of 16 in 2002. That is the gold standard in terms of results. I thought in terms of performance over an entire tournament, this was the best tournament in World Cup history for the United States men's national team. And I think you have to give the manager credit for that. And I'd like to see what he can do with more time, because I don't think Pochettino is one to let things get stale. That's always my concern when you go multiple cycles with a coach. Now, look, Didier Deschamps, it worked pretty well for him. He had a lot of success. Now, he didn't win again after 2018, but he had a lot of success. Yogi Löw for Germany. Now, it went too long for him, but you had some patience, and you saw a good World Cup in 2010 be followed up by winning it in 2014. Now, then they stayed too long, but that's a whole other topic. I think the idea of purely 4 years and that's it for a national team manager, I think we can possibly move on from that theory. I still will look at every situation in its totality and judge everything on its merits. And with looking at the 2 years we saw of Pochettino, and especially the last year, I want to see more. I want to see what he can do with more time. I want to see what he can do with more young talent coming through. I speak of that as the US U20s are playing El Salvador right now on FS2 in the CONCACAF U20 championship. It's actually the US U19s. And yes, Cooper Sanchez is there after sticking around with Atlanta United for an extra week because they were a little light on midfielders. So Cooper's there. Braden Dunham, who is from Peachtree City and came through the Atlanta United Academy and is the only college player in this group. He is at Furman. He is there as well. Neither one on the field right now is scoreless after the U.S. won their opener. So a lot of young talent coming through for Pochettino to work with. So I want to see more, and I'm excited that he's going to stick around. Now, I would like to get a full commitment from him for 4 years. Don't want to see him leave if a club job opens up now. This is not the same conversation as people were trying to have when Milan was interested before the World Cup. Do not do that nonsense where we change the context. We can't do that. We have to stay true to the context. I told you back then, and I will completely stay true to it now, he was looking at being out of a job at the end of the World Cup. He should be exploring his possibilities. He ultimately did not get the Milan job. Ruben Amorim did. He was linked with other jobs. He did not get them. I don't know how deep he got into them. The Milan job is the one that seemed like it got the furthest down the line. This is a different conversation. What I would want from him now would be, hey, we're going to commit to you for 4 years if you commit to us for 4 years. Because you don't want to make a change in the middle of the cycle again. That would be the only caveat that I would have to that conversation. Otherwise, I want Mauricio Pochettino back with the U.S. men's national team. I talked about it a little bit earlier. This performance for the U.S. in terms of the kind of expected goals, advanced data, however deep you want to go into these things, for the U.S. since 1990, this was the best tournament. They had an XG advantage against Paraguay, where they won 4-1. They had an XG advantage against Australia, where they won 2-0. They had a slight deficit against Turkey, where they lost 3-2. They had an XG advantage, pretty good one against Bosnia and Herzegovina. And then they got blown out by Belgium on the scoreboard and in the XG, the expected goals. It was the best tournament in terms of differential that the U.S. has ever had since this is tracked. You were minus almost two goals in 1990 and 1994. You got closer to minus 0.6 from 98 through 2006. You got a little bit closer to zero, minus 0.2 in 2010 and 2014. You didn't make it in 2018. You were minus 0.1 in 2022. So very tight in that one, which I think some people tried to paint that World Cup as a failure, which it wasn't. It was a very, you were right there. It was really close. If you take out the Turkey A match, which is a little complicated because you rotated your entire group, which we'd never been in that situation before, you're on par with 2022 in terms of your World Cup. I think when you take that and you take the style of play, this was the best World Cup that the U.S. has ever had. All right, let's get into some of the fallout on refereeing from the World Cup. Because, again, context. I always put my hand up for context, and man, some people are forgetting it. A lot of headlines worldwide because a lot of people are still on their anti-Argentina train. And as I have said many times, I am biased. I'm an Argentina fan. But it has gotten ridiculous. There have been some crazy statements made from people. And some are continuing to do it, which at this point, why? What are you trying to accomplish? I don't get it. And it shows in the way this was being reported. So it came out this morning that IFAB, which oversees the laws of the game, the rules of the sport, IFAB came out and talked about how the sending off of Breel Embolo, and to be more clear, the second yellow card of Breel Embolo, they were saying that that should not have happened. That's not how things should have been done with that intervention, because they did not want the mistaken identity rule in terms of using that for VAR. They did not want it to be used in these kinds of situations. They want it to only be applied when a card is shown to the wrong player who didn't commit the original foul. Now, in the situation, the Breel Embolo part of it was the second time that it happened. So, one, to say that the referee did it incorrectly in that case is absolutely categorically incorrect, because the first time it happened, Miguel Almiron took a dive, Tim Ream was called for a foul and shown a yellow card, and the Dutch referee, and the Dutch have been really at the forefront of pushing using VAR in some different ways. So it's not really a surprise that you had the referee, Danny McAlee, use VAR and his crew, use VAR in this situation and use mistaken identity to say, wait a minute, I gave a yellow card to Tim Ream. The yellow card should be to Miguel Almiron. That falls under mistaken identity. That's how we're going to use it here to correct this. And it was lauded at that time. There was no pushback on it. And FIFA came out and said, yes, we are good with this interpretation for this competition. So when it came up again, that's how it was used. So again, to say that the Breel Embolo one was done incorrectly is not true. What IFAB is saying today is that they published a clarification that VAR protocol is not eligible for that type of incident, although it could be for future competitions. They are doing a review, and it could be used there going forward. Again, not right now, but going forward, that interpretation could be fully approved. For the competition with the World Cup, it was. FIFA put out a statement after this, and they said that the interpretation of mistaken identity was consistently applied during the FIFA World Cup, which is 100% true. Talks about the two incidents and how it was done. The simulation itself cannot be disputed. That is accurate. And it should not result in a disciplinary sanction against an opponent that then may lead to further consequences, such as a sending off for a second yellow or a match suspension for accumulated cautions. That's very, very true. FIFA notes IFAB's comments in their circular that goes out to referees, and they are talking, and FIFA is pretty confident that this was well received in terms of this interpretation, and it will be part of the discussion on revisions to VAR protocol. So, a whole lot of debate and a whole lot of accusation that are not correct in this. FIFA went with the interpretation that was used in the Miguel Almiron incident, and then that was consistently used in the Breel Embolo incident. Now, there is also a lot of talk right now, and it is still bubbling up, so it's very, very early on what this is. But there's talk about FIFA planning to sell a 20% stake in the World Cup in the commercial operations. So basically, if they sell this stake, which is valued at $20 billion, they would then get money in up front on future revenues coming in. And that's what they say they're trying to do. Now, Joshua Kushner's Thrive Capital is expected to lead the proposed investor group through Thrive Eternal. Kushner is the younger brother of Jared Kushner, who is married to Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka Trump. There's a lot of talk about Trump and Infantino and that relationship, and a lot of people worldwide who are not happy about it. And that's why there is a lot of outrage about this conversation. right now, it is very early in the conversation to know what it is. And I think there's a lot of grandstanding going on that is kind of above and beyond what the actual conversation is. We've seen leagues do this. Liga MX has talked about it. Serie A has talked about it. Bundesliga has talked about it. I think La Liga did a kind of modified version of this where they sold commercial rights in advance and got money in the door in advance and dispersed that to their clubs. And that's essentially what FIFA is saying they would do. They would disperse money to their member associations, over 200 national federations. So this is a very complicated situation. And there's really not a lot of the actual mechanics of this public yet. The concern is that the private investors could put pressure on FIFA to purely maximize revenue. That's where the pushback is coming from. And that's valid pushback. I think some of the grandstanding is a little over the top. I don't love the idea because I don't think it's really necessary. The World Cup is extremely valuable on its own, and I don't think you need to go get revenue straight away to do anything else unless you're actually really going to use it in ways to grow the game worldwide. And that's always been a sore subject when it comes to FIFA because there's been a lot of talk and a lot of promises. And to be fair, a lot of things done, just maybe not consistently done. And the money hasn't always gotten into the places that it should get to. But then that gets you to the national federations. And again, very complicated conversation. So there's going to be a lot of talk about this, because it crosses over the business, the World Cup, which we're all passionate about, politics, which makes the world go round. So many different aspects of this are going to keep this in the news cycle internationally, and everybody's going to have to make a statement about it. I don't know which way it goes. I need more information. We'll see if we get it, and we'll see where this conversation goes. But I know where the conversation's going on the other side of the break. It's going to the 3-4-3. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. One more segment of AST coming up on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot! Goal! Goal! Goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
3-4-3 brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game. Let's start on the local side. Number one, it was not a good weekend for Atlanta United. It was a very good weekend for Atlanta United, too. 3-2 win over New York City on Sunday morning slash afternoon, an 11 a.m. kickoff. And yeah, I was there after walking in the door at 3 a.m. getting back from Foxborough. So were five starters for Atlanta United, too. Goalkeeper James Donaldson, center back Toto Majoub, midfielder Adrian Gill, Ignacio Suarez Corey in the attack, along with Arif Kovac. They had all been part of the first team trip. They all got home at varying stages between 3 and I think 4. I want to say one of them said they got home at 4. They all started. And they got to the building a whole lot earlier than I did, I can tell you that much. And Arif Kovac had two goals, so maybe he doesn't need any sleep. It's crazy. Really good win. Goal in the 12th minute, a great goal from Kovac on a volley. Lovely cross from Andrew Hardines, the academy midfielder who has been among Atlanta United 2's best players right now. He's been insane in terms of the midfield, and now he's creating chances and big ones. Kovac scored again in the 66th minute. That's his 15th goal of the season, 18th goal contribution overall to lead MLS Next Pro. Domination in the first 45 from Atlanta United, too. They outshot New York 8-1. NYC twice cut the lead to 1. It got to 2-0, then NYC scored 1. Then Liam Butts scored to make it 3-1. Then NYC scored again very late. Atlanta had to hold on. They did that. 10th win of the season. First time the team has done that in its history. 10 wins, 6 losses, 3 draws, 33 points. They are back at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground, which will be their home field for the rest of the MLS Next Pro season. That's going to be Friday, July 31st, against Carolina Core. That game will kick off at 4 o'clock Eastern time. You can watch it on YouTube. You can watch it on the OneFootball app. You can listen to it at soccerdownhere.net/listen with our own Madison Cruz on the call. Number two, Kovac, with the two goals. He was named the Offensive Player of the Week by MLS Next Pro. The first one mentioned the volley from the Andrew Hardines cross. The second one, a loose ball in the middle of the box that he had time and space to finish. He's leading the Golden Boot race with 9 match weeks still to play. He's 19 years old. He came to Atlanta before last season in MLS Next Pro. It took him a while to get going. He had some injuries. He's 6'5", maybe 6'6". He's had a massive breakout year, and we had a chance to see it really start to come good for him late in the Next Pro season last year and playing with the Atlanta United U18s after that in MLS Next Play. Was really starting to click, and he has been hitting on all cylinders all season long. So impressed with Arif Kovac because he's a big guy, but he doesn't necessarily just play like a big guy. He's got good feet, and the volley from the Hardines cross shows you that. Number three on the local side, the Georgia State Soccer Association, they have a series of grassroots coaching courses. Registration is open for them. This is anybody who's interested in coaching in the state of Georgia, and this is a great entry point if you've kind of been bitten by the bug this summer with the World Cup, if your kids are playing and you want to learn more. I mean, you don't have to actually go on and coach, although that would be great. If you just want to learn a little bit more about how coaches operate, these are great courses to take. And they're open for registration across the three different formats, 7v7, 9v9, and 11v11. The dates and locations range from August 8th, 9th through the 11th, 21st and 22nd in Milton, August 8th through 11th in Dunwoody, August 8th in Rome, August 29th in Richmond Hill and Savannah. All over the state, you can get your coaching journey started. Make sure you're following Georgia Soccer on your social media platform of choice, and you can register for free at learning.ussoccer.com. Seats are limited. All right, four headlines from all over the world. Let's stay on the coaching conversation, and let's go to France. Zinedine Zidane was officially named the new French national team coach. It was not a shock. This has been talked about for years upon years once Didier Deschamps said that this was going to be his last run. Zidane won the 98 World Cup as a player. He won 3 Champions League titles as Real Madrid's manager. He's been out of coaching since leaving Madrid in 2021. He has reportedly turned down multiple coaching offers. I think PSG was mentioned at one point. I think the Italian national team was mentioned at one point. I feel like any time a job opened in Europe, Zidane's name came up. He wasn't interested. He was waiting on this job. So now he takes it. He will formally start on August 1st. Number two, Italy. They've been through it. They've been through it a lot lately. They have a new federation president, Giovanni Malago. They had new people in charge, Paolo Maldini and Leonardo, in charge of the federation. Had being the key word. They were there for 16 days. They put forth Andrea Pirlo as the manager of choice. Well, that wasn't going to work because Pirlo has commercial ties, sponsorship ties to a Russian betting company. And Italy has been very outspoken in its support of Ukraine. And you were not going to be able to politically make that work. And I don't know if Maldini and Leonardo knew about it, didn't know about it, didn't care, didn't think it was a big deal. I don't know. You have to ask them because it creates political turmoil. Well, the Federation President, Malago, he said, well, you're not hiring Pirlo. That's not going to happen. So Maldini stepped down. Leonardo followed him. They don't have sporting directors now, but they do have a coach, and it's a coach that they've had recently, Roberto Mancini. He is back. He coached Italy from 2018 to 2023. He won the Euros in 2020. He did not get the team qualified for the 2022 World Cup. North Macedonia knocked him out. He resigned the following year to take the Saudi Arabia national team job. And yes, a bag of money, I'm sure, was included. It could have been a suitcase. It might not have been literally a bag. It's not Tennessee football. But yeah, he left you to go take a lesser job. And he failed. And he got fired. and now you're hiring him back? I don't really know how you justify that, but Italy's missed three World Cups in a row, so I don't really know what to say about the Italian way at the moment. It's not pretty, and it's a mess. We'll see if Roberto Mancini can get things right this time around. All right, number three on the headlines, Premier League is cracking down. Actually, all of England's leagues are cracking down on goalkeepers faking injury. I am outspoken at times about how referees function in England because I think a lot of people point to them as that's the gold standard, and I would honestly say that they're worse than most top leagues. This is a very good move. This is when you have the situation when a goalkeeper acts like they're hurt. Referees have really been hamstrung because you can't make the goalkeeper leave the field for 60 seconds, and you kind of have to believe that they're hurt. And what it's turned into has been basically a tactical timeout, which is funny after everybody got so hung up on hydration breaks being an opportunity for a tactics talk from the coaches. They were already doing this. They were faking injury to do it, which is not better, by the way. So this is a good way to deal with it. So if a match stops for a goalkeeper injury, the head coach has to immediately nominate an outfield player to leave the pitch. That player then has to stay off for at least a minute before the restart, after the restart. If the coach doesn't nominate someone within the 10 seconds, then the captain is automatically the one who has to go off, which I kind of like. There are exceptions. If it's a foul, if there's obvious blood or like an obvious injury, the referee can opt not to force this. But I like it because this has become a huge problem in the game. I am one, and I've talked about it during the injuries being faked to get yellow cards. I do not like diving. I do not like simulation. It is something that the game has to do a better job of dealing with. This is a good start. Well done, English football. Number four on the headline, Sebastian Berhalter. He is headed to Middlesbrough. Good World Cup for Berhalter. He is going to Middlesbrough. He's reunited with Aiden Morris, his teammate from Columbus. He's in the last year of his contract, so it's not a huge transfer fee. It's $1.5 million plus a future sell-on for Vancouver because he's almost out of contract and he could walk on a free. So getting him to Europe is a good move for U.S. national team. I think it's a good fit. I think it's going to help Berhalter. Playing with Morris will help him too. I really want to see what he does at Middlesbrough in the English Championship. All right, three things that make me smile as we wrap up this edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Number one, the goal of the tournament, the fan voting concluded for the World Cup, and Cabo Verde's Sidney Lopez Cabral, his curling equalizer in extra time against Argentina in the round of 32. That was voted the best goal of the World Cup in FIFA's public fan vote. I would agree with it. I think Lionel Messi's volley in Atlanta against Egypt off the underside of the bar would be in the conversation for me, but that goal from Sidney Lopez Cabral, unbelievable. And the celebration too. I mean, he ran away from his teammates and climbed into the stands to find his girlfriend and his mother. He told them beforehand that if he scored, he would run to them. His mom was crying. Didn't realize at first that she had either really fainted or almost fainted when the ball went in. Just incredible scenes. Cabo Verde captured everybody's hearts this summer, and Sidney Lopez Cabral scored the goal of the tournament. Number two, and this is one that I do want to see if we get a follow-up on. When England was in town for the DR Congo match, a group of England supporters went to Truist Park, and they became big Michael Harris fans. And Michael Harris ended up with an England jersey, and he became an England fan. Is this going to continue? Can we continue this on? I'd like to see it. He did pick England to beat Mexico, and he got the score right, too. So I don't know what he picked in the semifinal against Argentina, but are they going to bring Michael Harris over for an England match? Is he going to get to go to England and maybe see a little of the footy over there? Hopefully this bromance continues between England fans and Michael Harris. That'd be cool. And number three, it's All-Star Week for MLS. It's in Charlotte. The Skills Challenge today, it got interrupted by storms coming through. I always love the Skills Challenge. It's a fun night, and you get a lot of interesting elements that happen to it. Former Oglethorpe soccer player Danny Ramirez, who you probably know a little bit better from his acting. He was involved in it. He almost beat Sun Heung-min in a passing challenge, which was really impressive. Thomas Mueller having a good time. I always love the skills challenge, and I love this all-star format. It's MLS All-Stars against Liga MX All-Stars. So Major League Soccer against the Mexican League. It has a different feel than an all-star game where there's no defense and there's really no competition typically. This is much better than playing a club team where guys play together all the time and you're bringing together a group of guys who've never played together and they don't have any time to train. Both teams in this situation are in the same situation. They're both coming together. They get, a couple training sessions probably, and they play. But there's a lot of pride for MLS to beat Liga MX and vice versa. I love this format. I think it is the best all-star format going right now. I'm really looking forward to the game tomorrow. We're doing a viewing party down at the Brewhouse Cafe in South Downtown. Come hang out. The game kicks off at 8. We'll be doing some talking on soccer down here starting at 7 o'clock. Maybe we'll have an update on potential rule changes for Major League Soccer. Maybe we'll have an update on the rumor mill in around MLS, and maybe an update on the rumor mill when it relates to Atlanta United. We're all going to find out together. All-star game tomorrow. That always makes me smile. We'll be back next week after a trip to Philadelphia. Atlanta United on Saturday in Chester, PA. Pre-game coverage with Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz at 6:30 here on the station. Kickoff at 7:40 with me and Mike Conti on the call. And I'll be back next Tuesday to break it all down. Adios, everybody.